If you're fascinated by the darker sides of humanity, join us every week on our podcast, Serial Killers, where we go deep into notorious true crime cases. With significant research and careful analysis, we examine the psyche of a killer, their motives and targets, and law enforcement's pursuit to stop their spree. Follow Serial Killers wherever you get your podcasts and get new episodes every Monday.
Where are we at with UFOs in 2024? What in the world is Kona Blue? We talk about this and more with Chrissy Newton on this edition of the Paranormal Podcast.
This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harrell.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harrell, and we are joined, as you can see on the screen if you're watching the video, with Chrissy Newton. And she is a writer. She's a PR professional with her own company, a partner at thedebrief.org, and also the host of Rebelliously Curious with Chrissy Newton, which is an official podcast of The Debrief. And my goodness, it's very hard to keep up with the UFO UAP news out there. It seems like there's always something breaking, Chrissy. Today is no exception, but so glad to have you on the show again.
Good to see you too, Jim. Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, when we first talked about this, I thought it'd be good to get a catch up with you in terms of where you are. You know, I would be interested in your feeling. You know, middle of last year when we saw the Congressional Committee and we saw Grush testify and things really seemed to be moving. It's like somebody got a colossal can of WD-40 and got things moving on the UFO subject. But then I felt like the non-disclosure forces may have like stepped in and said, whoa, it's a little too much. We need to slow things down. And we had a lot of naysaying. We had some more re-kookification efforts. It seems like more jokes were being made about the alien subject. Then the Arrow report comes out. Nothing to see here, basically. And I found myself as very dispirited and very discouraged, kind of like, are we ever going to get to the end of this? Is it just a replay? Are we just basically replaying every 60 years? It seems like there's a flap or something happens. You know, people get excited. It looks like something's going to come out and the government steps in, or aspects of the government step in and say, nothing to see here. The media falls right in line and we just start the process over again. I felt like we were back in that loop after being really optimistic about a year ago. But I'd be curious about, what did you think about what's transpired over the last year or so?
Ooh, so much, I think, has over the past year. I think we're in a lull right now, which is not a bad thing, I would say. We're always going to have ebbs and flows no matter what. But I had a conversation once with David Marler on a podcast about, is history repeating itself? Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I know it looks like it might be, but we are moving forward, right? We are advancing. I do agree with that, but I also feel that there's a lot of things that are repeating itself. You know, we're seeing different systems or different, not programs, but different organizations coming together to analyze this phenomenon through the government. So we look at NASA, for example, doing its scientific report. Well, we've done that before with the Condon Committee, right? We've done that in multiple, although there was different, we're not giving something to do a disinformation campaign. NASA's not doing that, and I don't think they will. But we're seeing, I think, very similar mechanisms is what I'm saying, is that we're seeing a lot of echoes of, well, we need to start again from the beginning and look at this phenomenon from the beginning. It's like, well, haven't we done that already in the 50s and the 60s? You know, don't we already have documentation of that? Don't we already have reports and we have programs that did that? Why aren't we referencing that more? And so, or why aren't we up to date on that? So I feel that there's a lot of, well, let's go back and start again. You know, it's, I feel there's tons of that, and I wish there wasn't. I wish we could look, you know, have a more comprehensive report. The past air report that just came out was laughable. Let's be honest. They had dates wrong. They had historical dates wrong. They had historical times wrong. Like, it was a mess. Like, I think it really was a mess. And I asked the question then to the government, if you can't even get documented history that civilians even know, and you can't even get it right in a government report, how can we hope that you'll even do justice on this topic? So I think there's been a lot of mistakes that have been made. I think there's been a lot of information that hasn't been properly reissued again through, like, for example, the report. I think there's tons of that. So right now, maybe we're going through a lull because we're realizing the mistakes that the government's made. And we're also waiting for people to come forward. We've had lots of people say that there's tons of whistleblowers. It hasn't happened. So lots of promises have been made, but not a lot of them have been kept, I feel. And so you're seeing this people stepping back from the subject. And I think people being concerned that they might be being lied to. And I don't blame them. So there's a lot that's going on right now. And I think the lull is probably needed because we need to look back and reanalyze what's happening.
Now, when you talk about the government and different entities acting as though, hey, we're starting from square one. There hasn't been the last almost 70 years of activity. None of that existed. We just found out about this with the Nimitz and the Tic Tac video and all of that. It's a whole new thing. Do you think that's genuinely people thinking that? Or do you think that it's a further piece of the obfuscation? Let's pretend that the previous 60 years didn't happen. Let's pretend that, you know, Roswell didn't happen, or Kecksburg, or Rendlesham Forest, or whatever it might be, that none of this stuff happened. The Phoenix Lights. Let's pretend none of those exist, and that it just started. And again, I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been at a store, and you've got the cashier who is very energetic about the job, and they're like putting the stuff in the bag, and they're like, hi, how you doing? Have a nice day. And then you've got the person who'll take the thing, and they're like as slow as they can. And I think that they're, and I don't think the government is a monolith. I think that, like any other large organization, there are different factions. But there's a faction that wants to slow play this and wants to make it like it's a new thing. Do you agree with that assessment, that maybe this idea that we're just starting on this subject is just another offer, another attempt to obfuscate the truth?
Yeah, I think so. I would say that's pretty accurate. I also do and would recognize that there are people within the government that have no idea about this topic, mm-hmm. right? We see people every day reading a paper or doing any type of research, coming across this, stumbling into this topic and going, hey, there's more. You know, from the New York Times original 2017 piece, all the way down to David Grush's pieces now that was released with The Debrief and News Nation. That's how we're getting new people coming in. And for sure, government employees and people working in the Pentagon and in defense will be some of those people. It would be ignorant to think that they wouldn't be. But I do feel that if you are tasked to research this topic, and we've seen multiple programs, we have the information, we have documentation, we've had programs for the longest time. So it's starting again and doing another historical analysis to me seems like a waste of time or stalling in some form. I know that you have to do an historical analysis, and I think it's smart that they do. But the problem with this historical analysis is that it wasn't accurate. And that's the problem. You took all of this time and spent all of this money, and you couldn't even get dates and times correct? Come on.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just, that's the part that's really frustrating. And I think that, I don't know if that's intentional, but it's sloppy work. It's really, really sloppy work. So that makes me think it's intentional when it's that sloppy. Come on. Like, you're telling me they can't fact check dates and times correctly?
Yeah, true. Like, when it comes to the AAR report, my first thought is like, oh, here we go again. This is Project Blue Book 2.0, yes. Project Whitewash, basically. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It seems so dismissive for something that, even I think a reasonable skeptic would say that the jury is still out. But I think that it's just like another thing thrown up there, in my opinion, to just appease people like me. And I'm guessing like you, I don't want to speak for you, but people who have a real interest in this, they just want us to go away is kind of my read of it. Now, new news, Kona Blue. Now, we talked about a little bit before the show, and I just became aware of this in the last day or so. This amazing information released that basically shows that the government, sections of the government, had proposed a plan to reverse engineer recovered UAPs or UFOs. But I guess the idea being proposed by AARO, and again, I'm a little shaky on the details, so if I misspeak, folks, I apologize. Just learned about this. But proposed by AARO, denied by Department of Defense, I think, because there was, and the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, was involved as well, proposing to do this study, and then the study was, the effort was never approved because he said, we don't have any UFOs or UAPs to study. There's nothing to study. So why would we do a research project like this? My question, as I stated to you before we started, was why even consider it if you don't think there's really something to this? And we can get into a little more some of the specific things they talked about. But I know I'm kind of catching you off guard here, but your initial read of this Kona Blue situation.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. This is totally new to me too, in the past, like literally just a little bit. So I agree. If you think, if why look into something if you don't have a hunch, right? The government wouldn't spend, well, they could, but more than likely you don't spend all of that money potentially to even propose this type of project if you feel that there's no validity there. So where the validity is and where it came from, I don't know enough of yet. I haven't read all of it to know of why they felt to create something like that. I believe it was an addition and additional to, or it'd be the next program after ATIP and OSAP would be Kona Blue, but it wasn't approved. So AARO released this, I think, from what you and I discussed. I believe it wasn't through a FOIA request. So my thoughts is that they say AARO said that they released it when they found this out through the historical analysis. I believe that wasn't in the report, though, from what I know. I think this was something that was additionally released. So maybe they were trying to get ahead that they would release this because people were getting wind of what Kona Blue would mean so that it could be FOIA'd potentially. That might have some ignorance there around that, but I feel that that's probably what that is of why they released it. Because it's someone like John Greenwald or somebody else would FOIA and get that information and then feel like they were hiding this as a project. So we look at legislation. It's okay for them, I would say, for the government to have a program like this because it's already been noted in the legislation that you can, you know, if there's any form of technology, reverse engineering of technology or thoughts or opinions, let's remember that can be reverse engineered as well. Strategy can be too. It's not just technology. That whistleblowers can come forward and speak to that. So it's in the legislation now, and it's welcome to talk about that. So I don't think the Pentagon would have to hide anything like that because it's they're asking people to come forward and speak of it if they know of any information. So yeah, I'm not surprised. we look at, for example, I was saying this earlier to you, remote viewing. You know, the CIA did multiple programs in remote viewing. If they didn't have a hunch that there was something going on, why did they do years of research in the program? And I feel that that's kind of, there's a connection to that idea of, you know, maybe not talking about a program, but you know that there's some validity to it.
Yeah. And apparently some of the things that they talked about here, and I was taking some notes earlier, we're talking about looking at geographic locations of anomalous activity, control of technology, and these are paraphrased, they're not direct quotes, but technology, control of technology via consciousness, and studying the dimensional space-time barrier. Those seem like they're awfully specific things.
Just a few things.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that unless you had a good hunch, and probably more than a hunch, you've made the point to me usually, government studies aren't over hunches. Pretty good idea that some of these things exist, and they were even going to look into remote viewing further, as I understand it. So it seems like an awful lot of specifics just for like, oh, well, you know, let's see. You know, that's like, I don't know, finding an abandoned car in front of my house and saying, we should really study if this belongs to an underworld gangster. Well, I mean, why would you think it would be an underworld gangster unless you had some reason to believe that that car was left in front of my house by a gangster? I mean, it just seems like, what's the predicate? What's the predicate to this? And I don't know enough about it. Maybe it makes more sense. But to me, the predicate is, we kind of think these things exist. We might even know they exist. So let's do an official study on it. At least that seems to me to be the assumed predicate of it.
Right. And I think it does say in one of the documents I've read here that the program was denied.
Yeah, so it was denied.
Proposed, right. It was proposed, but it was denied. So that's interesting. I wonder now if that program is still happening in a different name. You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I mean,
compartmentalized into different programs. But as of now, from what I'm reading, and again, I might be wrong because it's new, that they're saying that this was only proposed, but it has not happened.
Yeah. And I'll put a big disclaimer on everything we say because both of us have just delved into this now, basically. So forgive us if we get anything wrong.
Or let me know. I would love that.
Absolutely. But what I'll say is you talked about other names. And I was reading a tweet by John Greenwald earlier who was talking about, I don't know if I can find it now, but he was basically saying that it's funny that the government has so many different names for programs that even maybe, I don't want to mischaracterize it, I'll get the exact tweet here. And basically the idea is that there's so many names for these different programs that I know it's in here somewhere. Hold on one second. Here it is.
Well,
this is from 2 days ago. I mean, you got to admit it is pretty funny that the Kona Blue documents produced yet another variation of what ATIP's name was. It's kind of like the people that worked on the project couldn't even keep basic facts straight, to your point, even at the top secret level, which it was top secret. Now it's been declassified. But I guess the point being that, I would say that you and people like Micah Hanks and Richard Dolan, you guys are the kind of people who like live and breathe this all the time. I'm very interested, but I don't scour the internet every day to see what the latest and the greatest in the UAP subject is. I keep more up to date than most people do because we do a lot of subjects. I do everything, ghosts, Bigfoot, the whole thing. So even I can't keep up with the names. ATIP, Arrow, ASAP. I mean, there's so many different names. And at some point you got to think, again, part of the reason, and I know that's the nature of government too. You know, there's a name for everything. There's an acronym for everything. But sometimes it's like, is that part of the game? You just make it so confusing to people. They're just like, I don't want to hear this. It's just too much.
100%, I think so. I think they like to play with us, or they like to do that. We see that that's been done in multiple different parts of government. So I would say there's a couple thoughts that come from this. We've seen that, ATIP to OSAP, where the money was going. Was it going to ATIP? Was it going to OSAP? That being misunderstood. If ATIP wasn't actually an official program name, it was a nickname. So it wasn't the actual name. And so when Susan Goff was asked for information about, ATIP, that she wouldn't be, I believe that's correct, is that when she asked information about ATIP, she would refer to another program because it wasn't an official name. It was just a nickname. So we see stuff like that. We also see, it wasn't, I believe, in between OSAP, ATIP, and Arrow, there was another insane long acronym that they gave up. So we're seeing it consistently happens. That must be a mechanism of government of why they do that. And then deciding on what department has it, what the department name is. Is it hard to remember? For sure. That comes out of it. I'll let you going to say what you say, because I can tell you.
It's a great way of doing the old, it means what the meaning of the word is. In other words, if you're in a particular department, okay, let's say XYZ, I'm in department XYZ, and fully know individually that in department ABC, they have proof of UFOs. Okay. But I'm in XYZ and I'm in front of a congressional committee. I can tell you without reservation, our official study of department XYZ has found no information whatsoever about the existence of extraterrestrials. Telling the absolute truth. It's being truthful, but not particularly helpful, in the words of our former president. So I guess what I'm saying is a part of that game is plausible deniability. It's it's sheltering truth in certain silos. So you can say absolutely truthfully that Department XYZ has no knowledge, didn't say anything about Department ABC.
Exactly. 100%. And also, I want to go back to what John Greenwald is about, capability, right? It was the capability of, again, you know, here's another program that they wouldn't tell us, or the capability of it. I wonder if not showing that you're not capable of doing proper reports or analysis or research shows that the government is human. I wonder, you know, because to me, more about this Conan Blue thing, I talked to Micah Hanks about this on the phone too. And I was like, I just don't get it. I don't understand why they would even let that go out the door when it was so inaccurate. Like, and it wasn't like one or two mistakes. It was right. So many of them. So does it shows me that the government is not capable of doing research? But I don't want to believe that, because there's so many things that the government does that's so correct and so accurate. Like, do you just don't care? Is that what you're saying to it? Is that what you're showing us? You don't give a shit. Explain the language. This isn't important enough to you. So we're just going to throw out crap. But it also makes them look incapable. So what does that mean? You're not capable? Or are you doing that for a reason? In my mind, I just can't think why the government would put out something so sloppy.
Yeah, excellent
point. So, yeah, that's what mind boggles me the most. And I don't think Sean Kirkpatrick is this scientist that is just like, oh, you know, woe is me, I'm stuck in a mechanism. He knew what he was getting involved in. And his name is attached to that paper. So all of those inaccuracies and everything else leads to him. He is that person that released this. This is his work. Yeah. You're not capable, in my mind, then, to be able to run this department when you give us a release or give us a paper that is filled with inaccuracies where the average person, you could probably just Google online and correct the date. I believe they even have the date of Roswell was wrong. I think there was multiple dates in that that were wrong. Like, it's just, like, I think they put like a year before. Like, it's just, and I might be wrong with that too, but I believe that there was multiple things that were referenced that were just wrong. And to me, that says you're not capable of doing the job. You shouldn't have released the paper. You should know better than that, if a scientist even do that. And also, this is a slap in the face.
It is indeed. We'll be right back with our interview with Chrissy Newton, but first I wanted to tell you that True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 6, is now available for pre-order at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably a lot of other places. We're working hard to go wide on this release. That is my compilation of 65 of some of our best campfire stories we've done. This will be the sixth of the books. We're very excited about it and hope you'll check it out. Now, this is the ebook that is currently available for pre-order. Print will be coming, but just the way the publishing works, they can get the ebook out for pre-order. So check it out at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and we'll have links and everything set up eventually. But just wanted to give you a heads up. The official release date is May 7th. And I'm really excited. I think it's the best campfire book we've done yet. And the nice thing is you can read them in absolutely any order. So you could start with this one and work your way backwards through the catalog. And now back to our interview with Chrissy Newton. Now, let me ask you this. Are there any stories that you've encountered in the last several months, whereas, you know, kind of like, I mean, people like me have been, woe is me, we're never going to get to the truth. There's no quote good news, or there's nothing interesting going on. Is there maybe a story related to the UFO UAP topic over the last several months, last year, that has maybe not gotten enough attention in your opinion and is a positive step? Is there anything that you can think of in your work with the debrief and so forth that kind of fits that criteria of being something to maybe not celebrate, but say, hey, this is something we should be paying more attention to.
I think it's more civilian research, I would say, is that it is doing the best work right now. You know, I would say the stuff with NASA and, you know, them looking into this and being part of that in the past couple of months, I believe, and talking about this and releasing their own information. You know, I think that's positive from even for them as an organization. This is part of their mandate. So I'm excited to see that. But from the government's perspective, no, I don't think there's anything that's been amazing. If anything, it's just been so much drama rather than and even coming from the whistleblower side, it's been very quiet and much more, I would say, there's so much drama in that. But I feel that the civilians who are doing work in research are still the best at this right now, that we're seeing. And that information that's coming out and people telling their stories, I think that's probably what we should be looking at now. And people doing shows and podcasts and all these different things. I think that is the most important work right now. Not saying that science and technology of the stuff that they're doing behind the scenes, that's always important. But there hasn't been anything, I would say, immensely positive from my perspective that I've seen yet outside of the civilians that are working on this and trying to shed light on and doing their own research. And like civilian scientists, I refer to that as well. So what do you think? Curiosity.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the difference when I talked about history repeating itself, I think that I do believe that to an extent. I think that basically this stuff pops up every 10, 15, 20 years and the government goes, let's just knock this down. But I think there's a difference now. And this right here is the difference, is that there's, till they shut it down, and I don't want to be conspiratorial, but at least there's an outlet. Now, truthfully, that means that there's a lot of people who put crap out on the internet that's no good, right? And I mean, even us, I mean, I was a communication major and had journalism classes. I don't consider myself a journalist by any means. You certainly have a great PR background. So you noticed that we both were very careful to caveat all this stuff because we're just learning about this Kona Blue. Unfortunately, there's people that don't take that care. And they just say, oh, well, this is the way it is. So that's the bad side. But the good side is that there's plenty of people who are serious about this, doing the best they can, trying to bring discussions about this, thought processes, surfacing stories. I think about, we talked about Micah earlier, his project to intake from UFO experiencers. So I think that that is something that makes it a little tougher for those who want to kind of, you know, push us back down into a hole, whereas 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was much easier to do it. I think now it's like, God, it's kind of like Scooby-Doo, right? Those meddling kids were on the internet, those meddling content creators. And not, again, not saying that we're all perfect, not saying that we don't make mistakes, not saying that some people don't put things forward as fact they shouldn't necessarily. But I do think that the voices that come up are very valuable, and they're bringing through a lot of thought-provoking information and keeping the subject alive and kind of refusing to say, okay, we'll just go away. I think that's really a thing to be very optimistic about.
Yeah, I will pivot to that too and say anthropology. We're looking at from a cultural perspective. There's tons of anthropologists that are in this topic more than I've ever seen. And this is a human topic. I know people, like, as much as I love the data, and I think everyone else does, I think the data is extremely important. This is a human topic. So anthropologists need to come in and look at this and have a better understanding of it, how it affects us. What does that mean to us? What does it mean to science? And having conversations about policy, science, and anthropology together. And the Soul Foundation is doing that. As much people might want to comment about who's invited or who's not, you know, that's semantics in my mind. But in general, they're doing really good work because those intersections are really important. And we need to have more academics having these conversations at those intersections. So I think Gary Nolan and Peter Skafish are onto something when it comes to that. Micah's database that he's collecting right now of all different UFO experiences. I know how much Micah Hanks loves data. So as someone who works with Micah and somebody who knows him very well, I have a lot of respect for him for doing that because he's just doing it because he cares. Like, that's the honest truth. He's interested in the data. He's extremely wants to know what's going on. And that is his forte. Being able to collect that data and have other people analyze it along with himself so he can find correlations. And that's meaningful to him, and it is meaningful work. And I trust him with that information. Some other databases I don't trust with information. I know Micah and I know him personally. So yes, I can say that as someone. But anybody that's using a database, Micah's database or anyone else's, they need to look into it when they're submitting their information and where that's going to go and what does that mean, because it's important data. They might just think, oh, it's just a UFO hit and, you know, whatever. It's like, no, that it means many things. It could be unidentifiable. It's all data points, and every single one of them is important. So I think, yeah, civilians are doing great work. And I do agree with you, Jim, that there's tons of people that are just creating crap in the space just because they want clicks and they think that it's thinking it's meaningful, but it's causing more misinformation. You know, that's a real challenge. But we're going to see that more and more and more in all parts of media and social media. So it's just the beginning of it. It's probably going to get worse, unfortunately. I think the best thing we can do with each other is teach the younger generations, along with even our own generations, how to critically think through that and understand what is misinformation, what is disinformation, and how to go about finding the truth.
And I think obviously with AI coming on board and becoming, you know, every day it seems like there's a new innovation, that's going to be more and more important to try to have people who stick to the old ways, you know, and so forth. So I think that's a good thing. One last thing before we let you go, because I know you're up against a hard stop here. And this seems unrelated, but I think it is related. I'm here in Ohio. And luckily, from my yard, I got a beautiful vantage point of the total eclipse of the sun. And when that happened, because I was one of those people, surprisingly, I'm so like head down working on this stuff. I was kind of like, it's the sun. It's no big deal. And I saw it and I'm like, boy, was I wrong. And the thing that happened at the moment of totality, we had about 3 minutes and 45 seconds of totality, which was amazing. Everybody let out a cheer. You could hear through the whole neighborhood a collective cheer. And it was kind of like an epiphany to me. It's like we say this, but you don't really think about it. We're all so small. And this subject, some people say, why are you worried about UFOs? Why are you worried about aliens or whatever it might be? This subject is so universal and so important to all of mankind that it really kind of put it even more so into focus for me and kind of gave me even a greater appreciation of the subject. What are your thoughts about the in closing, the universality of this subject and the importance of it?
Well, I agree with you that the total eclipse was unbelievable. Like, it really was. I was actually covering it for the debrief because I just find it amazing. And it is profound, right? Like, it makes you understand that you're alive and how quick you could not be alive too, yeah. Right? There's so much that goes into that eclipse. But I was in the line of totality too. I was in Toronto, but to have a couple more like minutes or seconds, I went to St. Catharines, which is about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from Toronto, and took a GO train there with a friend. And the same thing, it's just unbelievable. She actually cried during it.
Yeah.
And I laughed. If anybody knows the, totally. And if anyone knows the double rainbow joke, there's like it's a really old social media joke.
What does this mean?
Yeah, the double rainbow. So I made a joke where I was like, Jess had a double rainbow moment where she was just like crying and like she was videotaping it and I shared it and just her overwhelming emotional response to something so beautiful and so amazing. And me listening to her and then visualizing, I'm like, in my video, I think I'm like, this is just unbelievable. I just want to document the time and be in this and be so present. There's so many people around the world in that moment that were present, I think is so important. And to feel it and experience, because we don't, a lot of people live in the past try to get caught in their future thoughts. The solar eclipse gave us a time where we had to be present for those 4 minutes or longer. And experience what it is to be human and, you know, how quick this could all end too, right? And how much, how important that sun and everything else is to us, to being human and to being alive. So it's pretty unbelievable. Yeah. Well, but in context to this, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No. I mean, I think that it is just such a great moment. And again, how small we are. Well, I want to give you a chance to tell people where they can find everything you do, including this show, Rebelliously Curious, and everything you do with The Debrief, and anything else you'd like to share.
Thanks, Jim. So everybody can go to my work, or Micah Hanks, or Tim McMillan, or MJ Benias, or Christopher Plain. You can read all of us at thedebrief.org. You can listen to my podcast. It's called Rebelliously Curious with Chrissy Newton, and it's on all podcasting platforms, or you can go to The Debrief and see it on our podcast tab. And they can check me out on social media. Instagram is being Chrissy Newton, and then Twitter is Chrissy Newton. So all the different platforms, tweet me. I always say hi. I'm very chatty with people on social media because it's something I do enjoy. So yeah, if you're curious and want to ask questions, I am too. So I'm there for an open discussion.
Well, it's been great to speak with you today. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. I hope we can do this again.
Me too, Jim. It was good to see you. It's always good to be here.
And thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. And if you enjoyed this show, make sure that you follow. If you're on video, hit that follow button and the notification bell and all that stuff the new YouTubers say. And please do tell your friends. And we'll talk to you next time. And keep exploring those mysteries. Bye-bye, everybody.